I went down to the crossroads, fell down on my knees. I went down to the crossroads, fell right down on my knees. Gonna ask the Lord above for mercy, help me if you please. Went down to the crossroads, I fly to drag myself a ride. I went down to the crossroads, look out baby, tried to flag my bad self a ride. Nobody seemed to know me, everybody just passed me by. I went down to the crossroads, I saw old Satan headed my way. I went down to the crossroads about midnight, I saw old Satan headed my way. He said, "Give me that guitar, boy, and I'll teach you how to play." Look out, baby. Crossroads, I saw old Satan headed my way. Look out, baby. I went down to the crossroads about midnight. I saw old Satan headed my way. He said, "Give me that guitar stick, man, and I'll teach you how to play." I said, "No way, baby. I already know how to play." You can run, tell my friend Willie Brown. I said, run, you can run. Tell my friend Willie Brown. Standing at the crossroads, and you know I believe I'm sinking down, baby.
All right.
Yippee. Yeah. One down.
Quick question about that guitar you're playing.
Yes, sir.
I know it's nylon string and it has an extra hole by the fret hole, kind of like where you've taken it, you've hit it a lot with your pick.
Well, no, that was from playing a lot of flamenco guitar. Let me show you.
It's almost like you're borrowing guitars or buying guitars from Willie Nelson.
So watch, when I play flamenco, you go like this.
Oh, okay.
They tap. To keep the rhythm.
Yeah, yeah.
So I played enough flamenco over the years to tap a hole in it. It took like 22 years. Yeah. And this guitar will be 42 years old in the summertime.
And you wouldn't change it for anything, would you?
I would not.
It's got a great sound to it and...
A lot of fun.
That was awesome. Well, I guess we can talk about the book right now.
Hey.
We have a book author in our midst tonight, Neil Haverstick, and this is his... fourth book, true, called Hopelessly Microtonal, The Musical Instruments of Neil Haverstick. Let's talk about what prompted this project to get started.
That is a great question. You know, I mean, I'm a little older. I can tell them about my grooming tips for men, old men, but we'll talk about that later. Yeah. So you get a little older and you start looking back and thinking, what'd you do and what didn't you do? And, you know, I'm very content with what I've done with music, so no problem there. And I thought, well, What could I leave? What am I leaving here? What have I done?
All right.
Well, I've got a pretty unusual instrument collection. Kind of happened by accident over the years.
And this is only part of it that we have in this room.
I only brought six in. I got 30 of them.
30 of them?
30 wow. Guitars. And ouds and whatever.
Which are all in this book.
All in the book.
I mean, this is amazing. Wow.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I thought it'd be guitar players are notorious gearheads anyway. You know, they're always buying stuff and selling stuff and hanging out, talking about guitars. So here's some guitars to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. And this book also gets into how you got into the world of microtonal.
Yes.
And started off with John Sterrett.
John Sterrett, who
yeah,
may
let's
be
talk
listening.
About that.
Who knows? You out there, John? Well, I met John, gotta be 40 years ago. Oh my God.
14?
40.
Okay.
1979.
That makes more sense.
He was playing around town, and he was great, 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 great bass player. And we wound up doing a lot of work together, a lot of gigs. And one day, he just simply gave me that black one over there, the 19-tone guitar, and said, try this out. And I never looked back, as the saying goes. I tried it out, and one thing led to another, and I got it in 89.
It must have been kind of weird the first time you tried to play a scale on it, huh?
It was... And you forget how little you knew at the time, but I didn't know squat, diddly squat, as they say. So I studied a lot. And then I was lucky. I started to meet people around the country that were into it, and they'd send me articles and ideas and stuff. So I got...
Wow.
Did my first CD in 93, mm-hmm. 19-tone. And then I got a 34-tone, and I got a 31-tone, and just kept spiraling out from there.
Okay, well, how did John Sterrett find out about this?
You know, I've known a few geniuses in my life, and John is one of them. And
okay.
Somehow, I never did ask him, what made you build that? And by the way,
he must have really been into it to actually make one.
I'm sure he was.
And I'd be kind of curious to think, how many did he make before you got yours?
It was a 19-tone guitar and electric bass. And the bass is in the book, but since the book came out, he's altered the bass now. So it doesn't look anything like the one in the book.
All right.
He's building guitars like mad. He's retired, and he's just a great luthier.
Okay, so where does do these different scale guitars come from different cultures in?
That's a very interesting question.
Like who has a 19-tone scale versus a 34-tone scale around the world?
We could have 8 or 10 shows on that alone. Let's just put it this way. I was just telling your engineer, Brian, that it was Europeans 1200s, 1300s, it started looking for ways to play complex chordal music, which we now call classical music. And so Indians, Arabs, Turks, they didn't use chords in their music traditionally. Of course, now they do because of westernization. But so they had all kinds of scales. Who knows how many scales they had? I've got books about the Arabs from 1,000, 1,200 years ago with 22 notes of the octave. They were hundreds of years ahead of Europeans. So when the Europeans invented the keyboard, and when the keyboard gets tuned a certain way, now everybody has to play along with the keyboard. So that started changing the way it went. So 19 tone, 34, 17, 22, a lot of those are more European style tunings.
Okay.
If you will.
Right.
And there was a 31 tone keyboard in the 1400s in Europe, very well documented. And the physicist Christian Huygens, very famous Dutch physicist,
yeah,
he had a 31 tone keyboard. Isaac Newton looked into tunings. It was a popular subject. Yeah.
So is when they started wanting to do chords, is that when they came up with their Western way of where everything is evenly balanced and the same amount of space or whatever's
equal
sense?
Temperament. Yeah, yeah.
Equilibrium.
Well, we call it now EQ
temp.
Well, most instruments now, guitars, pianos, whatever, they have 12 notes to the octave and they're equally spaced mathematically. Right. Hundreds of books written on that, but that's the simple and true explanation. So my 19-tone guitar has 19 equal notes, so I got 7 extra. My 22-tone, as you can see from the frets, is not equal, and we'll get to that in a little bit. And I got a 34-tone guitar where they're all equal. And there was a Mexican composer named Carrillo that had 96 notes to the octave. I mean, you're getting pretty out there. Yeah.
Every time we talk about this, it blows my head, but...
Me too.
Well, what we're talking about, folks, is... Like, for instance, an A sharp is not the same as a B flat in some of these other systems.
That's very true. And when you get into, let's say, J.S. Bach, we've all heard of the well-tempered clavier. And you want to start a ruckus on the tuning forums, talk about what Bach tuned to. Like we say, get the popcorn. It's a lot of fun. There's people go at each other over that stuff. But well temperaments were 12 notes of the octave, but they weren't equally spaced. So each key would be a little different. And guys like Bach liked that. So you'd write something in the key of C and it'd be real mellow and in harmony. And by the time you got to like F sharp, it'd be a little spikier. So he wrote the well-tempered clavier to demonstrate those differences between keys.
Oh, so they weren't evenly spaced?
Not in well temperaments.
In well temperaments, mm-hmm. Okay.
It's not the same as equal.
Okay.
Although a lot of people didn't realize that until the last 40, 50 years. They thought, no, that was equal. Nah, old Bach was a pretty sharp feller.
Ah,
yeah.
All right. So how many different kinds of temperament are there? Can you name, maybe you can't name them all, but how many, can you name a few of them? Equal temperament, full temperament.
Okay, there's equal temperament. Okay. Pythagoras was huge in the tuning. So we call that one Pythagorean.
Yeah.
And then, remember, this all happened over hundreds of years, so we're condensing it. And then there was something called mean tone, where some of the keys would sound better than others. They could play in some keys really well, but the others didn't sound so good. So they kept messing with it mathematically. And then well temperaments, you could play in more keys and sound a little better. And then basically they settle on equal temperament. It's out of tune in every key, but the exact same amount. So you get kind of used to it. So now you can play in all 12 keys. They're kind of bland because they all sound exactly alike.
Yeah, okay.
There's a book for people that are listening. It's called Tuning and Temperament by J. Mary Barber. And there are hundreds of different European temperaments in there. I mean, just European temperaments.
So what are you calling these notes if we have a flat and we have a sharp? But now, what do you call those other notes that beyond or in between all those flats and sharps? You call them sharp-sharp or flat-flat? Or
sure. My first book, or my last book before this was called Harmonics and Spirals. And it's all from the harmonic series, which I'll demonstrate in a minute.
Okay.
And... my friend Adolf, another great bass player, he says pitches and little sons of pitches. I thought that was pretty accurate.
Pitches and sons of
pitches. Sons of pitches. So how about I play one for you?
That sounds like a great idea.
All right. So now we're going to plug in.
Folks, you're listening to Neil Haverstick here on Cabaret, this week's edition.
Okay, so here we go. Now, hopefully... Yippee, still working. You never know.
So let's talk about this instrument before you get
going. Okay, this is my fretless guitar. It's electric. It's an Ibanez. And a guy named Brian Deckebach did this work. And Brian's a great luthier, too. When John Sterrett, he taught math in New Mexico for several years. And I met Brian, and I highly recommend Brian. DelToroGuitars.com. Great luthier. So Brian defretted this one for me. And one of the focuses of my book as well, Dan, is that none of my instruments are very expensive. This
right.
is $200, and if it sounds like a $200 guitar, I'm surprised, whatever that means.
Yeah, seven strings.
Sometimes I retune it. So here's what the harmonics are. Listen to this. And they literally mathematically go to infinity. If you are in tune with the spacings of the harmonics, you're perfectly in tune. That's the simple explanation. So sometimes I tune this to different harmonics and play it, but tonight I'm just going to do another blues.
All right.
So I did Crossroads, which is a traditional. Well, this is where... now we're taking it out a little bit with the blues. So this is called Alien Blues Man.
Great title.
Why do you think I'm wearing that?
Yeah. It looks like you got that shirt in New Mexico. It's a shirt with a cactus and the flying saucers.
My daughter got that for me. She knows her dad. Okay, so here we go. Alien Blues Man.
Thank you. I don't know, that's pretty mesmerizing.
I wonder what Robert Johnson would have done with a fretless guitar.
Well, the thing I'm thinking about, I mean, you know, you hear rock bands all the time, and they're always trying really hard to get these weird sounds and things like that, but they're using regular instruments. It seems like if they had an instrument like that, it would be much easier for them, and they could get much more weirder sounds. I just don't know if they have to be at a certain caliber to be able to play with each other.
Dan, you really hit on something, and a lot of us in, you know, the microtonal field, that's what we're saying, like, look, just get a 19-tone guitar, get a fretless, go. You're right. All these metal guys, you know, I mean, they're great musicians, but it all kind of sounds the same after a while.
They could really sound different if they took up a few of those.
Did you hear that, guys? He's correct.
There's no cue cards in here. I just kind of, I don't know, that's just something I thought of.
There's a band out there that I've not heard yet. I think they're called King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizards, or King Lizard and the Gizzard Wizards. I can't remember which. They're supposed to be very good, like a punky rock band, and they had an album called Something Microtonal Banana. So they're going for it. They're out there.
That is awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
There's people all over the world doing this. It just hasn't got above water yet.
Okay, but is it more prominent around the world and less in the Western world, or all about the same everywhere?
Well, like we said, Arabs, Turks, Indians, Persians, they've always done other tunings in 12-tone Eagle temperament. This is like the newest tuning in the world compared, like Raheem has told me, the oud is 5,000 years old, you know?
Right, Raheem, your friend in New Mexico.
Yeah,
are
you listening, Raheem?
He has several albums out in Smithsonian now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He just did something down at the Tijuana border with a whole bunch of people. Regina Carter and Antonio Sanchez. It's some big project they all did, kind of in support of the migrants and all.
Oh, I think I saw that, yeah.
Yeah.
Regina Carter.
There's a video out about it. I haven't seen it yet, though. But Raheem, the oud is, if it's 5,000 years old, maybe it's 10,000.
Yeah.
So equal temperament, the way we tune our instruments, is the new guy on the block.
Well, think about what you said earlier, though, too, is that here you have all these physicists and mathematicians coming up with these tuning systems. Were they musicians, too?
Hard to say. I've got the papers about Newton. He was, he was into optics and colors and the spectrum and all that. And he was trying to relate the notes of the major scale to the colors in the spectrum.
Really?
Yeah, he did a lot of work. I mean, he wasn't a musician, remotely. But when you study Pythagoras and stuff like that, there's this whole thing. Again, you could talk for weeks and months about this. There was kind of a school of thought that if you deviated from the harmonics of the tune of the natural tuning system, it was wrong. It was almost evil, you know. And so Pythagoras was like this legendary theorist. And if you deviated from his pure tuning, there was something wrong with you. There's a book called Temperament by a guy named Stuart Isaacoff that relates all that to the European culture and the bishops and the scientists and everybody. Galileo, you know, the astronomer, his dad was a very famous lutenist.
Wow.
Vincenzo. And he came up with an almost equal temperament about 500 years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
This is incredible. But what's amazing, too, is that you said that guitar cost $200, and I was reading your book, and you met Tommy Tedesco. And he said, you see all this stuff? This one costs $200, and here's this fantastic player, Tommy Tedesco, playing like a really relatively cheap guitar.
It was a fourth of that. It was a $50.
Oh, it was a $50?
Mexican classical. I got to meet him in 82. He was very kind to me. He really liked me. He endorsed my first book.
Yeah.
Sent me a real nice letter. So he took me to a couple sessions, took me to a Mel Brooks movie. Okay. So he's just playing real simple little acoustic fills, you know, and he told me, quote, he says, this is like moving boxes at Douglas Aircraft. He was ready to move on from being a studio player then. But he calls me over and says, look at this. So he hit a note in the acoustic, hit another note. You could not tune them. And he said he liked it better than his $2,000 Ramirez, and he's playing it on a Mel Brooks movie. That was a big lesson for me.
Wow.
Now, he didn't play it all the time. He had plenty of great guitars, but I saw him do it. So, cost?
And isn't there a quote in the book where he enjoyed that over some of his other
his
guitars?
Ramirez.
It cost a lot more and more.
That's
a quote. Yeah.
He was a great guy, by the way. Yeah. He was something else.
Well, I like the way you did this book because I'm not all the way through it yet, but it's very entertaining.
It's supposed to be.
It's technical, but it's entertaining. And there's little fun things you can laugh at or laugh with. You know, it's very, your writing style is very conversational. So it's like, okay, here's this really deep subject, but you're not going to get, like, academic about it. You're just going to do it, like, the way we speak.
Thank you. I've really, really tried to do that. And that's how I try to teach, too. I've had little kids. I had a little 11-year-old girl last week. I was explaining key signatures to her. And she goes, oh, nobody's ever explained it like that before. I said, well, it's not that hard. Just simplify.
Yeah.
That's my battle cry these days. Just simplify stuff. So microtones, look, I got more frets than your guitar. Oh, okay. Now, yeah. If any of my math friends are listening, it's a great field, but sometimes we lose people when they go on these forums and they see these astonishingly complex conversations about the math. Now, if they want to do that, there's a place for that. Sure.
Yeah.
But I'm more for, how do I explain this to my 9-year-old student?
That's right, yeah. Because, you know, you're seeing another generation of potential players coming up, too.
Yeah. Well, this guy right here, he's a young guy. He's got some good years ahead of him.
Yeah, we have a videographer in the room, Matt, and, yeah. And also the designer of Neil's website.
So yeah, I got to give a shout-out to Matt. He's been studying with me for about a year and turned out to be a computer whiz. And so he helped me assemble the book, and it's precisionpages.com, right? He does websites, so if you need a website, look no further.
Very good, very good.
Okay.
World always needs another good web developer. All right, what are we going to do next, Neil?
Well, this is an oud. And,
O-U-D.
O-U-D. Yeah. Uh-huh. This is what Raheem plays. And I've been playing about 10 years. I first heard it when I was 15, a group called The Devil's Anvil. It's an album called Hard Rock from the Middle East.
Okay.
And in my whole life, that's still one of my top five albums. It's brilliant. Brilliant. It was a bunch of some guys, they were in Greenwich Village in 67, this came out. And Felix Pappalardi, the guy that produced Cream, was in
right.
this band.
Okay. He was also Mountain, too, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Pappalardi put the group together for Columbia Records. They did one album, it's called Hard Rock from the Middle East. And that's where I first heard the oud, and I was sold. And I finally got one. I got two now. This one's an Armenian oud. It's made by a guy named Viken Nigerian out in Anaheim. Beautiful. This one's 7-string. Most of them are 6.
That's 7 strings?
Well, yeah, they're doubles.
7 double strings.
But this has a low 7th. Usually it's 5 doubles in 1 single.
Okay.
And plus I've got one that Raheem got for me. It's a Baghdad oud.
But the fret holes are interesting where you would expect, I mean, the good sound hole is, there's no sound hole. It's covered up with a darker color wood. And then you got three other sort of circular sound holes.
And there's, you know, one thing I like about Facebook is, I mean, I get a lot of oud videos on Facebook. There's some just flabbergasting players out there. So it's great. That's one thing I love about social media. You can talk to somebody in Iraq. Boom.
Yeah.
There they are.
Yeah, you don't have to wait to meet them in person. I mean, you can, you know, you kind of meet with people that are interested in the same thing you are.
Yes. So I want to really state, I'm not playing Middle Eastern music. It's too late for me to study it, but I've listened to an awful lot of it. I've hung out with Raheem a lot. When he gets up in the morning, he picks up his oud and he plays all day, pretty much. When he's not cooking breakfast and we're cussing our heads off together. He's just a great guy. He's a lot of fun to be around. And so he'll have a oud out, and I'll sit next to him with mine, and I don't, you know, I'll say, what'd you do there? And try to cop a lick or two. So I've not really studied it, so I just want everybody to know I'm composing my own stuff on the oud. So what you're going to hear tonight, it's a piece I wrote called Oud 13. It's a work in progress. It's the first time I've ever played it. And in the Arabic and Turkish cultures, there's a form called a taksim where you play solo without, like, percussion accompaniment. So there's rhythm, but it's just the rhythm that you generate from your own playing. And it's a very ancient tradition, so it can get pretty free. So I'm going to do this in the style of a taksim. It's called Oud 13. And this one's tuned way low. I think it's A sharp. So it's like a, God, way lower than a guitar. And I tune it in fourths.
So every string is a fourth?
Yeah, so this is E, A, D, G, just like a guitar, and then C, F. It'd usually be B and E.
Okay.
And then I tune this to a low note. So let's see how this comes out. And as I said, I have to wear my glasses so I can see what I'm doing these days. We've all got glasses on in here. We all need them.
That's another thing you can put in your old man diatribe thing where now I have to wear glasses to play my oud.
Or do anything close up. Yes. All right, oud 13. Well, great. Take one.
That's awesome. Have you ever tried to play Western music on that? Not to dumb it down too much, but I was just wondering, I mean, what would that sound like?
No, some of those guys I watch on YouTube are just, and they're taking pop tunes and Mozart and Beethoven and yeah.
Does it still have that Middle Eastern bent to it, or does it sound, or can they make it sound Western?
Very, very interesting. like, there's this one kid named Yusuf Abbas, flabbergasting. He's a real prodigy. To quote Raheem, he said, "This kid's gonna kick all our asses." So he's real badass. So he's flabbergasting chops. But I saw him playing like a real pop thing with a background drum machine, real nice. And
so you can do anything you want to with that. Then
you can do anything you want to with it.
Yeah,
sure.
A lot of scales on that piece. A lot of, it was pretty much all scales back and forth, right?
Well, it's an improv in the sense of I didn't plan out exactly how I was going to do it, but a lot of that stuff I worked on. So you get the basic form, and then you improvise around the form.
All right. So it's improv. So you're playing the little patterns or whatever as you feel like it.
Yeah. Where like in classical music, you got to play it the same way every time.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
Could you, now this might be a really crazy question, but could you like a Middle Eastern restaurant, could you play all night and on that?
No.
Or would you want to? I mean, it sounds pretty cool to me.
I know. Well, and a real good example about that is I picked Raheem up at the airport once and we're coming into town and I had an almanac of one of his teachers, Munir Bashir, one of the great legends.
Oh, wow.
And it, just sounded like he's improvising and Raheem started singing along with it. So I go, oops, that's an Iraqi melody. Woohoo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So our ears aren't quite adjusted necessarily to that.
Question about your book.
Certainly.
On page 58, we have the 24-tone harmonic on here. And I see two F sharps and I see two E flats.
Right.
Why do I see two of those? I mean, and they have different numbers besides them.
Here's a great point. So let's say on a guitar you go do, re, mi, and you hit the fret for the third. Do, re, mi, there's your third, one, two, three. Well, on a guitar or piano, it's right there and it's not movable. But if you think of it as an area rather than just where a fret or a key is, you can make a third sharper or flatter.
All right.
And that's why when you get into the harmonics, you can have tons of different thirds, stuff like that. So like you said, A sharp and B flat are two totally different notes in reality, but in Western music, they're the same note. And it gets confusing for students. I'll say, hit an F sharp. Well, you can also call it G flat, and they kind of go, eh. But, so let me grab my 22 tone.
All right.
And boy, the time did fly, didn't it? Figured it would.
Yeah, once we got started.
Man, it's all right, man. Hey, so it's a perfect example. Okay. Oops, we don't want that on just yet. Okay. Okay, so I just tuned this one D-A-D-A-D-D. And for those who can't see, the frets on this are not equally spaced. There's some real teensy spaces and larger spaces. So let me play a do-re-mi. No. There's your third. Now listen. That's a different third. That's called the Pythagorean third. It's a little sharp to this one.
Do it again. It's pretty close.
But it's not. So in an Indian and Arabic music, Dan, they utilize those small microtonal spaces where Western music does not.
Yeah.
We went for chords.
Right.
And they went for the microtones to be, again, simple, but it's pretty much the way it went.
Okay. So I'm getting part of this in that there's no way you could ever do chords on that kind of
Well, music. You could, but there's not much point in it.
Well, then you wouldn't be playing the way it's supposed to be played then, I guess.
Well, that's the way I look at it, but there's people doing all kinds of stuff, so,
Yeah, there's no rules anymore.
So I came up with this tuning myself. It's 22 notes of the octave, and took me years to figure it out, and Brian did this one, did a killer job if you're listening, Brian. But John Sterrett had to do the math for it, because the math for an unequal guitar is different than the math for an equal-tempered guitar.
Right.
So Sterrett did the math, translated it, and then Brian did the actual physical work.
Okay. And you explain that in your book when you talk about the sense, right?
Yeah. Right. So this is a great luthier job.
So Starrett is a mathematician, or a retired math
professor. He got a PhD in math and taught down at New Mexico Tech for 13 years.
Socorro, okay.
So now he's retired. Building a wine cellar in his house, and he'll give you lentil soup and sausage. It's very cool. He's a good guy. Okay, so this tune, I just came up with a name for it the other night. It's called The One I'm Waiting For. And it's in 22-tone harmonic tuning. And hopefully everything will work. You never know these days, huh? Oh, a note. It's based off a pentatonic scale, which you hear an awful lot. But then I add the 11th harmonic note.
Yeah.
And the 13th harmonic note, which... which you don't hear very often in music anywhere in the world. So if you went up harmonics, dot, 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 this is the 11th harmonic.
All right.
And this is the 13th harmonic. It's almost A. So that's A flat, so here's A. So you'll hear that in this piece.
Okay.
So here we go.
What's the name of the piece?
The One I'm Waiting For.
Oh, nice.
Maybe she's listening. You never know. And she'll like microtonal music. Cool.
Very cool. A lot of string bending, and I know sometimes you would play scales within a fret. I mean, instead of going up and down a fret for a scale, you'd be
right there.
Well, playing intervals of notes, you know, within like the part of the fret.
So yes.
You're going to be back up and down those strings within that fret.
Look. That's the only piece I've written on this so far, on this guitar. I've been working on this for 7 years.
That piece right there? Wow.
I got a video of the first time I did it in Rapid City, and it's changed a lot. Changed a lot since then.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, we got 5 minutes, but can you quickly talk about the Flying V story?
Yes.
Okay, and then we could close out with some music, because that's a good story.
Here, let me grab this. I planned for this fade out on this guitar.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, 1970, my goodness, almost.
That's a long time ago.
That was a long time ago. We were on college break, our band, and we were living in St. Louis, hanging out at the time on in the bass player's apartment's floor most of the time, much to his dad's chagrin. So we were just hippies, and we're hanging out in St. Louis, and we went over to jam in East St. Louis, which was quite a story. I have a friend named Bob Lohr, great keyboard player. He played with Chuck Berry for like 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he took us over there to jam at the Wagon Wheel.
Yeah.
And we stopped the crap game. That's how we knew they liked us. the guys playing craps came out to take a look. Yeah.
Wow.
Anyway, so we went to see Muddy at a place called the Moonlight Lounge in Wellston. And, you know, back in them days, there's places you didn't particularly go if you was Caucasian, to be politically correct. But we went. Just a little old bar, but everybody played there. So Muddy was in a cast. Oh. He'd had a serious auto wreck, and he was still recovering.
Wow.
And Albert King comes to sit in. So, you know, I'm in heaven, you know. So we're hanging out, and there's the bandstand, and right in the middle of the floor, some guy and his girlfriend get in a fight. And I can't say what they were saying, but she's throwing stuff at him. He looked like a riverboat gambler, this gray suit with the hat, and pulled out a gun. I mean, he's like this close to her. I'm going to kill you, man. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you. She's throwing shit. He bumps into Albert King, the guy with the gun, you know. And everybody takes off out the door, of course. Some old black guy fell on his face, you know. And so it chilled out. And we're standing out in the sidewalk.
The gun didn't go off yet?
Gun did not. If it would have went off, I might not be here. So we're standing out in the sidewalk just hanging out. And the dude with the gun just standing right next to me. And the gun's still in his hand. And I'm 18 years old, and but I grew up in St. Louis, so I get it, you know. So we went back in, and they finished up. And then a couple weeks later, Albert King came back with his own band and did a night, and we went and saw him, too. And we walked in, you know, we're a little nervous. And Wellston, they just park in the middle of the street and talk to their friends, and you don't honk your horn or anything. You know, you just go around.
Oh, really?
Okay. So Albert saw us and stuck his hand out. Hey, guys, I'm Albert. And we sat right in front of him. So when Albert shakes your hand, you're cool. Good stuff.
Nice story.
So what do we got here? How many minutes would you say?
I don't know. 3 or 4 or 5. Okay. No, probably not 5.
Well?
I think that, what's your cell phone say?
This piece is custom made.
Oh, we better keep going here. We've got 3 minutes. Neil, it's been great having you, and thanks, George and Brian, for doing the sound tonight. Matt, for doing the videographer, and thank you all for listening to Neil Haverstick, our wonderful guest tonight.
Oh, and I got to give it up for George. I mean, every time I come in here, I get a CD quality recording. You guys do a great job with this show. Locals are lucky to have KGNU, and you know. So should I just play, and then you guys could just cut out when we're done, no problem.
And a quick reminder: if you want to pick up a copy of the book, it's a great read. Microstick.net.
Yep. And thanks to Matt again and everybody that helped out.
And thank you, Neil.
People have been buying the book. It's doing okay. So this is my 34-tone guitar. Lots and lots of frets. There goes the 22-tone.
The 22 guitar, to narrate this a little bit, it just fell over. It's kind of tired.
Sorry.
Didn't have a snap. Didn't have a snap today.
So I recorded this song. It's called From the West. It's a very Indian-style tribute. So I'm going to just... On the Acoustic Stick CD, it's about 18 minutes long, but we'll do the short version. So I finish out at a very rapid pace. So thank you all for listening, and keep me posted.